Welcome to the third episode of the third season of the NFT Playground Amsterdam podcast, where we talk about digital art with the artists. In this episode, Casper Gokkel, Bart Bloemers and I, Krijn Soeterman, talk to the Dada. He was in the podcast before, on the cusp of a year ago, on the 1st of March of 2023. He recently published a book, Here for the Art, with an overview of his work of the past 5 years. And today, March the 6th, 2024, the Dada launches a new NFT called Stop Posting and Start Creating. So, Dada, welcome. There are so many things we can talk about. The vernissage in the gallery, your book, the NFT you're launching. And last year you left for the States after recording the podcast to plant a money tree. And I think we can talk about that a bit later. But first, you recently published your new book, Here for the Art, which was sold for the first time during a vernissage of your work in the Amsterdam gallery Corrie Expos. How do you say that?
Yeah, Corrie Expos.
Okay. Well, all the three of us were at the opening of the gallery.
It was great fun.
Okay, well,
And we also have to apologize, Dada. It's very early in the morning, and you're low energy in the morning. I understood.
Well, the whole GM of the NFT scene. I never understood the G. It's like good morning. Mornings are for sleeping. But hey, I woke up for you.
Finally. Well, we like it in the morning here, but
even before coming here, I minted an NFT. I made a tweet about it. So
cool.
I'm actually full energy. Yeah, I did it this morning. I think you told me you don't have to do it this morning.
Exactly.
I did it.
Oh, cool.
If people tell me you shouldn't do it, that's a problem. I always do it.
Yeah. That's a character I underscribe also. Perfect to have you here. So tell us, you launched a new NFT.
Well, actually,
project.
It's kind of interesting that the title of my new book is Here for the Art. And that was originally the title because it's the image of the cover is the NFT I launched like a bit over a year ago. So who knows, maybe the NFT I launched this morning will become the cover of my new book in 5 years' time.
Perfect. I have that NFT you launched last year. So,
by the way, the title is not Stop Posting, Start Creating, but it's Tune In, Turn Off, Drop Phone. I made a reference to Timothy Leary's famous 60s quotes about asset culture.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, well, that's the text on the actual NFT. Yeah. So yeah, I see. Yeah.
Yeah, so for the new book, it would be kind of complicated, but I've got 5 years' time to think about that.
Yeah, well, during the opening of at the gallery, I mean, it was very, very busy. I mean, I hardly could get into the gallery at all. But I got your book, and it's, I mean, you are so, I mean, so eclectical when you look at it in the different things you make. I mean, it's not only NFTs, but also a lot of big, well, physical artworks and also like the money tree you planted in the United States. Can you tell a bit more about what happened with that project?
Well, that's the money tree, the transfer money tree was a project which I originally started 2012 at Burning Man. And it's a tree. So I also started my own bank, which had the slogan, the art of turning art into money, which I think I started 12 years ago. But when we look at NFTs now, it's almost as if I already made NFTs in a physical form back then. So as a bank director, I produced my own banknotes of 0, million, infinite. And on the transfer money tree, they would be hanging from its branches. But we have been asking people to glue money. I would love to say real money, but in the NFT space, people go like, no, it's fiat money. So fiat money onto the tree and then draw and paint on the money. So turn the money into art. And it's been at Woodstock as well. And now the cool thing was, and I think indeed that was like a week after I did the podcast here, or I think I left almost a day after to the States, and we did it in front of the California State Capitol, which is interesting on many levels because defacing money as painting on money is still officially in the States a federal offense. And obviously I've been stimulating a lot of people to do that. So it's very interesting to do that in front of the State Capitol, and only later somebody told me that's even more interesting because financial transactions are not allowed on the Capitol grounds. So you're not allowed to accept donations. There's no money is allowed to change hands. But then again, I was not asking for money. I was asking for art because...
Yeah.
I must really say I really enjoyed the exhibition you did at Bos...
Kochexpos.
Yeah.
Let's just say at the gallery.
Yeah, the gallery. What I can't remember about it is the coloring. It's very, very nice, but also that every piece is a reference to digital.
Well, I think all of us have a purpose here, and that maybe sounds a bit heavy, but also as an artist, I've always been playing with the digital and the physical here. Because I believe, yes, we're all on our phones, we have VR, we're in the metaverse, but somehow people tend to forget that we all also live in a physical space. If I look at photos from my neighborhood, the pipe from 100 years ago, it still roughly looks the same. So, and we still make love, we still go out to dinner, and there's kind of this friction where we're in two worlds. And what I like to play with is, or think about is, where is the human in this new world? So when we're all AI is happening and the digital, a lot of people are making really cool digital stuff or playing with the AI. But I feel that my place is to work in like more the analog world or the physical world, but with clear reference to what's happening nowadays in the digital world. In this new series of paintings, one thing that it sounds stupid to say, I think it's really cool that I came up with that, but I think it's pretty cool that all the paintings got a small battery icon, because nowadays most images are being consumed, and I actually feel it's really consuming and not processing and looking at it. So you got like thousands of images all the time on your phone. But with a painting, I mean, the painting is there, it's standing still, and actually you are triggered to start getting images in your head. So when people look at a painting and they see the battery icon, I almost hope that they'll get a bit stressed, like, oh, fuck, the image is again. I'll see another 1,000 images and then I can't even find that one, and then realize, no, I can, you know, calm the fuck down because this one is here to stay.
Do you think there's a big difference between like an analog painting can be as big as, well, your canvas, and on your phone is, well, that's just the size of your phone, which is quite small. Do you think there's a big difference in size in how people, well, actually feel about a certain piece of art?
It's just a huge difference in everything. Yeah, it's the difference in size. But if you have got a big screen, you can, I mean, obviously digital, you can project it, you can blow it up huge as well. But with paintings of mine and a lot of people that came to my show, and I'm really glad that so many people came, but all of them said like, oh, wow, you really need to see this in real life. And I think that's the big difference, because when you see it on a screen, yeah, they're cool images. But when you see them in real life, you can actually for hours look at the structures. The more you look in there, I'm getting old kind of. And when I was a young kid, I mean, I'm happy that I've been always able to make a living from my art. But now there are people that for like 25 years, they already own paintings of mine. And what I love is that people come to me and they tell me that literally for 25 years, each day they're looking at the painting, and each day it's almost like their daily meditation, their yoga, their way, I mean, to process things, to deal with life. And I think that is what's so, I mean, everything has its own quality. Like the digital world is amazing and the physical world, they're both amazing, but they're different. And I think like, and I also make my black and white drawings, I make digital images. The NFT I'm now made is just a phone that's totally fucked up and that's painted. So as you said, I'm eclectic. I don't know, eclectic is also like a trendy word, but I've always, no, but it's not, but as an artist, I always felt like, so, okay, as an artist, you are not really participating in society where you study, you get a job, you make money. And I go like, if I don't always know I'll make a lot of money, at least I have one thing, I got my freedom. I never have to wake up unless for a podcast with you. But also I've got the freedom to whenever I feel I want to do something, then I'll do it. Because I think as an artist, what you feel and expressing your emotions is the most important thing. And often nowadays with art, sometimes it bothers me that artists are becoming like brands, and some even have like a brand manager, and you do something and then somebody will tell you, yeah, but you have to stick to your brand. And I think one of my biggest accomplishments for me is that I managed, after working for a number of years, that people actually accept that what I do is always a Dadara. Yeah. So they will not, I started making figures in the 90s, like the Gray Man and the Baby, or doing flyers for house parties. And for a long time, people would almost be disappointed and then go like, are you not going to make a Gray Man anymore? But we love your flyers so much. But since I always kept doing only what I want to do, after a certain point, you got a fan base that actually is really curious to what I will be doing next. And I mean, that's something that I'm kind of, it's not even proud, but it gives me a lot of freedom that when I do something, I know like people will just go like, oh, wow, we're.
Well, but you kind of stick to your brand. Because I have the old drawing from you, the baby who's doing DJ things. Mm-hmm. It still looks the same as a Dadara now. There are, of course, differences.
But
and,
if you
and
look
your coloring at is totally new and it's evolving. But, I mean, it's quite recognizable.
But if you look at my paint, you've been to like my last exhibition. Yeah. So the babies, the Gray Man, they were all about characters doing things. And now the paintings are... I mean, I would always say almost abstract.
Yes.
But not. So put the baby next to that one. And yeah, the thing is, of course, it's recognizable because it's me. Everything I do is totally me. So it's always, it always comes from the same source. But it's not like, look at a lot of, I'm not going to mention names, but at artists in the NFT space, you just, if you see one image, you actually know the next 100. You always know. Or Kaus, who's really known, he always has the same figure with the eyes. And but yeah, I can, or I build a big black box and I lock myself up inside the box for a week.
Yeah,
and compare that to the baby. But it's still the same me. And being able to lock yourself up in or build a big golden like and burn
it's
it.
It's also not. The point I'm trying to make is you are actually upholding your brand. I think if you look at your art, it's evolving. It's not standing still, but it's still. I think anybody that reads your book and goes back 10 years will recognize your work.
Yeah, I think nowadays, but that's why for me, it's so important to have a book, because if you look at a smashed phone or a 500 euro bill that has cut here for the art cut out, and as you say, the baby or the paintings nowadays, it is tricky nowadays that people look at my banknote and at the painting and they go like, yeah. And now people say like, yeah, both are a Dadara. So a cutout back now,
geez. Okay, yeah.
A 50 feet high golden like that I burn, the I Amsterdam letters that I cover up with 60 meters of fence, it's all, because it's all me.
Yeah, but maybe a good moment to just check and look at your book. I mean, how did you compile it? How did you assemble the works? Is it just like in a chronological order, or is it in a different way? How what would people see if they read it? Or
so actually with this book, and a big props to Hans of Kochiksbos, who's one of the owners of the gallery, but he's also a graphic designer. We worked for a year on this one. And what I also like is that the previous book was very much about me doing a big project like for real Dream Utopia, and in between like paintings.
So technically the book is also a collab.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything is a kind of collab. I'm collaborating with life, and for sure, always. But in this book, we first started having that grid, and it didn't work because the last 5 years have been really different than the period before that. So there's more a flow in this book. So it starts like with an NFT I made, Not For Sale, which are 16 like post-it notes with just ballpen written Not For Sale, animated and Not For Sale, even though people have bid it like over four ETH on it. And then the next one will be the tree with the banknotes glued on the tree. And then the next one will be Matt Alms and me being on a huge stage with an animated painting of mine. And that's, I think, what I mentioned before, that the post-it notes, the tree, and the banknote animated are all three a Dadara. But so that means if I feel like I want to make post-it notes with my ballpen and animate them, And I like what I really love and I think sums up everything is the back. I'm showing it, but nobody can obviously see it. But it says on the back of my book, my two favorite mediums to use as an artist are acrylic paint and mindfuck. And that for me sums up, because when I...
I keep talking.
I'm showing it now to a phone. So what I actually like is when I covered the I Amsterdam letters in a guerrilla action on the Museum Square, there was an item on local television, AT5, and there was a woman, I think she was the head of the Friends of the Museum Square, and she was really upset that the letters were covered by an artist. And then what I really loved, she said on television, and the worst part is I went on the website of the artist and he actually can really paint beautiful paintings. And then she said, but this is not art. These are, you know, fences and banners. This is not art. Yeah, and that made me really happy, because that's where I'm going to talk about the artist and not, you know, being free of having to stick to your brand or an image. If I feel I want to do something and cover it in conceptually, it's still the same.
Yeah.
It's a mindfuck for some of us. Yeah, it's a beautiful book. And I recognize in the book a lot of hearts for me. And also the word love, Temple of Love is in the book. And also the paintings are just maps of bodies or something like that. I don't know. For me, and I was wondering, what's your inspiration of what's the topic of the heart and the love now in your life?
It's actually interesting that you mention it. A friend of mine from Barcelona, she saw the book. She actually came especially from Barcelona for the exhibition. And she said, if you want to hear my opinion, your previous book was a middle finger, you know, like... fuck that shit. And she said, and your new book is love. So it's interesting that you also feel that. Yeah, and the heart is, well, there is one project where I actually did a project about the heart with UMC. It's the hospital in Utrecht. I actually was a witness of an open heart operation. I got my own heart scanned and made it out of gold plated
silver. Spoke with that collector who you created the heart for.
Yeah, the cardiologist. Yeah, he was at the opening. Yeah, it's such a... Yeah, so he was the cardiologist that was actually involved in the operation of heart surgery for my father. And then my father, as a thank you gift, gave him my previous book. And my previous book, the title is Open Your Mind So We Can Use Your Data. And the cardiologist got the book and it really touched him. And then he asked my phone number. And he wrote a poem. It was like, open your heart, open your mind. I wrote it somewhere in here. And he sent me the poem and he told me, like, I think you should come to the hospital. And that's how the whole... But that's... I love serendipity, coincidence. That's... Everything starts with a story. And I think the book... That's why I love this book. It just has a flow because it's a story where I do something and then another thing happens and another one and... You just freestyled through life.
Yeah. The funny thing is that, of course, last time we spoke, I didn't really know much more than the house art you previously made. And when I checked through the book, I was like, oh, there are so many different, well, views of life. And that makes it very interesting and really like a very nice book and very well published. So meaning as good paper and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that's important with...
Crane studied art, so we don't get artist compliments a lot of Crane. So let's get this...
Art history,
But art books for me are really... And I also... Because nowadays, as I said, I mean, someone's art is consumed digitally. And in the NFT space, it seems if you can only express yourself in a tweet, you're so limited... And yeah, then you need to be kind of a brand and have one image which sticks because you...
But that's also interesting because like books, they're like coming back because in some way because of people can read everything anywhere, but having something physical and having something which is different than what you have on your phone becomes more and more important, I think.
Well, for me, there's people always talk about digital versus physical and I go like they're both... They both are really good and they both have qualities, but they're both just totally different. And yeah, I mean, because, okay, I smashed a phone and I created an NFT. But I mean, obviously, I use social media a lot, but it's not a lot of people are so, It's like it's either this or that, and I believe in a world where it's this and that. But I also like that several people from the NFT space who bought my book, they've sent messages that they went like, oh, we spent all evening on our couch with our cat and your book. And I go, like, you're not spending, like, it's like with a painting. If you're on your phone, you're not spending all evening with one image on your phone. A phone is for scrolling, it's for discovering things, but also I discover a lot of art via social media. And if something I feel like, oh wow, this looks cool, then I'll try to find a book, I'll go to the exhibition.
Yeah.
So it's a great portal that will lead you to what an artist does. And for me, an artist, it's the whole, you know, the whole trajectory, the whole road an artist traveled. And an image is like a glimpse into that world.
Yeah.
And that's where I also...
So you always are with performing arts, and you used to go to Burning Man, but you kind of lost the taste of it. But you chilled us in a new event in Portugal where you bring your art to life. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, last time I went to Burning Man was 2017. I went blindfolded to Burning Man. I was locked up inside a big black box for the entire week. And people could come visit me and two others in the box only for 4 minutes, tell us how everything outside looked, and then we would write and paint it on the walls, like experiencing reality purely through the eyes of others. And while I was doing that, it felt like it was such a long journey at Burning Man, and I could not push it farther than that. So I left the box, and the second I left the box, I knew like this would be my last project. And now I found Boom Festival, but it's a place where I've also been doing projects like 12, 13 years ago. But now it almost feels like Burning Man is like my ex. You know, I still love Burning Man, but I'm kind of really happy we're not together anymore. And I wish an ex that you really love.
Yeah.
But now at Boom, what I love about Boom is that it's permanent. So they bought their land. So last summer we built a temple there, the Loading Love Temple. And it's there to stay, which I also, for me, feels it fits more in nowadays world to build something which is permanent than just, you know, projects which are ephemeral and which you burn. But then again, I mean, it's part of how you go through life and always challenging and evolving. And for a while, I mean, I'll be honest, I mean, blowing up shit with explosives, burning, smashing stuff with sledgehammers and chainsaws, I mean, I massively enjoyed it, but also I feel there it's again, it could become like, then it's your brand, like, oh, you're the artist destroying things, and then you go like, yeah, I mean, what next, a bulldozer? But it means like after, if I do something, as long as I feel it, I'll do it. And I know repetition is the key to success, but for me, repetition is also the key to boredom, so... But everything is a choice.
I like the bridge you make from permanent exposition, because you are one of the few artists that has also delivered an art piece to the Copernicus sphere that we have here at Playground.
It's the loading NFT one.
Right? Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And
it's still loading.
It's still loading.
And then you can find it at Project Copernicus, I think.
Yes, from Maarten Smakman. He runs that project, and he is still busy with finding ways to get more artists to be involved in that project. So how would you go about doing that?
Helping him find more projects, more artists?
So what is it for artists? Because that is a permanent way to exhibit your art in a certain space. And this is a new way of dealing with Web3 worlds, basically.
Actually, what's maybe an interesting story behind this all, that when I held the auction for the Loading NFT, because Maarten had actually just before that lost the auction on my first, the What the Fuck NFT. And then he was on this one, but there was another person who was actively involved in the auction, and he is Garrett from RareTech, with whom I would later do the Crypto Greyman project, okay. The 7.9 billion NFTs we made. And I mean, it's someone in the NFT space who you could call a whale or a medium whale, but he went like, I need that NFT, and the reason was that he wanted to burn it and then do something with it, so it would be very non-permanent.
Yeah.
But then Maarten was bidding, and then somehow Garrett got stuck in a loop and he couldn't get, there was an error, and he went like, shit, I need that NFT and I cannot bid anymore, because I was just going like, I knew he would bid higher, and suddenly Maarten won it. So it would have been, it's the difference between now, it's permanently, because it's, I mean, it's stuck in the Copernicus and nobody can get it out anymore.
Yeah.
But if that error would not have occurred, then it would have been burned the day later. So it's a nice, I don't,
it's
even
a lifesaver.
Yeah.
NFT saver.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes shit happening is the best stuff that can happen in retrospect.
Yeah.
Cool. It's life. I mean, things happen and you just need to deal with it.
Yeah, true.
Happen with the things that happen, or make it happen with the things that happen. I always.
Yeah. Or I love the English saying that says you can wish for what you would love to happen or acknowledge what's happening.
I actually didn't know it was in the sphere, and I just checked on all the other NFTs which are in the sphere, and there are quite a few now. So that's pretty cool. Anyway.
But I also, talking about the digital and physical, there's also in the book what I love, there's the loading NFT, but I also made a mural on a wall where it says loading street art, but that one is painted by hand. Yeah. And obviously a lot of people will see it digitally and they'll go like, is it Photoshop? Is it? So I like to play with those concepts of, I mean, what is real and what is not. And we're in this world where, and it's now is Apple Vision Pro, and I don't know, maybe eventually it will turn into glasses. Then, I mean, digital and physical reality will seriously blend. But I mean, look at all the videos you see now of people walking on the street in an Apple Vision Pro. It's still pretty clear for me that they're merging, but they are very different worlds. And I think it's very important to keep realizing that.
Yeah.
And to sometimes, smash your phone and start creating in the real world.
Well, let's do that.
Can I ask a last question?
Yes, of course.
Do you know when something is art? Because you said it's drawing, it's a lot of repetition. And then you said also sometimes does it stick? Do you recognize that moment of how does that go?
If something is art?
Yeah, that it's more than a drawing, that it sticks. You use the word stick.
I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, if you make 100 drawings,
yeah,
it are drawings, or maybe that it art, and then sometimes it's okay, so it's more than a drawing, then it's getting his of her own
is
life.
It artsy, or is it does art? It grow out of your sketchbook to a piece?
It always boils down to feeling, to gut feeling that you, because a lot of people, I became pretty good. I mean, some of you might have seen me on stage. I can stand on a stage in front of 1,000 people and I can explain really well what I'm doing. And I learned to do that because somehow as an artist in this society, you need to be able to find your place. But whatever I explain, and this might sound strange, it's not the reason why I do it. The reason is just because I feel, I know, I need to do things. And I'm recently reading The Creative Act by Rick Rubin about creation. It's a great book. I didn't learn anything new from the book, but it's so cool to read something and recognize everything. And yeah, there are things happening. And some people might say you're channeling stuff. You need to be an open vessel. There is just, and you know, and it's knowing beyond words. I get ideas all the time, and sometimes I might walk on the street. I don't know what I want to do, and bam, it's there. And I go like, shit, I need to fuck up my life again, and I need to go for it. And that is the reason why I do things. And the rest that people ask, oh, you're here because you want to change society, you want to this. It's all true, but on a different level.
Yeah. The funny thing is life is, of course, always uncertain. We never know what happens the next day or the next hour or the next minute. So, makes sense to, well, maybe fuck things up, even if it's not really.
Well, people always feel like, oh, they can put off till tomorrow or they can plan things for next year. But I always go like the only thing we have and which is sure is the now. Yeah. And also, actually, I feel like if you have an idea and you don't do it now, but you go like, oh, maybe I could do this in like 2 years' time. In 2 years' time, I'm a different person. The world is different. So if I have an idea, yeah, I do it now. It's practically not always the best solution, but I mean, it's life.
Yeah, I like that mindset.
That sounds pretty awesome. Well, thank you all for joining the podcast. And well, talk to you probably in a year again or something.
Well, it's been a pleasure waking up early for this.
Okay, well, we can do it like in the late afternoon
next year. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, cool. Dada.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.